Welcome to the Global PSC podcast, brought to you by the Global Product Stewardship Council and our members. Our members are based in 10 countries and operate globally. They include producers, product recovery organizations, reprocessors, NGOs, and governments at federal, state, or provincial and local levels. The Global PSC helps facilitate the development of effective product stewardship and extended producer responsibility, or EPR, schemes globally. Details are available at globalpsc.net. Today we're in Hong Kong with Doug Woodring, founder of the Ocean Recovery Alliance, and he's also the founder of the Plasticity Forum. We're pleased to have met Doug through one of our Global PSC members and to have participated in Plasticity Forum discussions. We also hosted Doug as a featured speaker during our inaugural International Stewardship Forum in Sydney. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you, Russ.
Tell us about yourself and how you've come to target plastics over the years. How did you end up here?
I've worked in Asia for 25 years. I grew up in California, so I guess the immediate shock factor of pollution in this part of the world in those days, and now it's better. Then it was more air pollution, but I do a lot of sports in the ocean, and so I see the material there more than your average citizen who might be walking through the streets and not really be engaged with nature and the outdoors. Mm-hmm. So I've been at this about 10 years. We're one of the only groups that's really been working on this at an international level across borders who doesn't live in the West. There's plenty of great NGOs doing a lot of good work on the local territories, but we, Hong Kong being a small place, we always were thinking about larger scale programmatic changes that could work across products and materials and borders and movement of that. And finally, now after about 10 years, some of this stuff is finally hitting the mainstream press and mindset.
Finally getting people to the table.
Yeah, now we don't have to explain these things. I launched this in Rio at the Earth Summit over 8 years ago. We want to focus upstream in the rivers and creeks, and that's what it was always meant for, but it'd be very good on coastlines. And that gives people the chance to report macro trash when they see it in or near the water before it gets lost to the water, because once it gets lost, it's much harder to recover it. And you can take 3 photos, geotag any spot, and stakeholders in that given watershed can all then start to manage their creeks, rivers, streams a lot better vis-a-vis plastic, which no one in the world has really done well yet. Actually, Melbourne has done a good job with some of its trash traps in the river on the Yarra. Mm-hmm. And Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, has about 100 of them in the city that no one really knows about, but there's a few cities who've done a good job, but this is really to get the rest of the community engaged in this topic.
That's interesting, because one of the things that we've seen in a number of reports is really to help address some of the plastics impacting Australia, you've got to hit Southeast Asia because they're ending up in Australia with currents. And
correct, because once it gets into the ocean, the wind and the currents will take it all different directions. So that's what we try to, we're more on the prevention side. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the cleanup side. We don't do a lot of beach cleanups and things. We did just start a great program in Cambodia on the Tonle Sap Lake called the Water Falling Festival and the Water Rising Festival. And it is a cleanup for the villages on the lake because they've never had this opportunity or been taught how to do this. So, but generally we don't do the beach cleanup type of work.
Fundamental aspect of product stewardship and extended producer responsibility is identifying and engaging producers to address the impacts of their products. Is that particularly difficult given the ubiquitous nature of plastics in their production?
It is difficult, and it's difficult because there's no cost put on the negative externalities of having that waste or that byproduct of that material product or package go into the environment. It's the cost is picked up by municipalities or by the community in terms of trash or no trash and that recovery. There's also not been a lot of value put on the positive externalities of cleaning that up. So without a a value for the goodness that you bring in a cleaner environment, or the cost associated with these materials and the pollution it creates. It's hard to get brands and companies to really want to move beyond what has been their normal sort of CSR positions, and hey, we're helping the community through some education programs or recycling, but not thoroughly engaged on what we can do to really move the dial with the products or the package.
How do you see brands driving change?
Well, if you look at the three pillars of the communities that can all affect change, being the community, the private citizens, or the consumers, the governments, or the corporates. The corporates have the biggest power and the biggest opportunity to make a change. The governments usually move too slow. They have short-term terms and also aren't able to legislate across the myriad of product types and materials that exist. So brands, on the other hand, and companies have, you know, R&D resources. They have large consumer bases, maybe small if they're a startup, but they have engaged, could have engaged citizens as consumers who can help with their recovery of the material through rewards programs, bring back programs. Obviously, they can redesign packaging so it's either reusable or a much better, to easier to recover, could be biomaterial. And so all of these, a brand can really take leadership on and gain credit for doing so if they jump into this space. I think a lot of them now are sort of looking around and figure out what they should do and can do, but they're still always worried about money and cost. And they're not really valuing the brand value and the PR of doing the right thing. And using that to justify the extra cost in that change.
What roles do you see for product stewardship and extended producer responsibility in addressing plastics, especially marine plastics?
Well, I would say that to go back on the marine plastic side, marine plastic is just everyday plastic on the city in the way we use products in our lives. So it's only there because the waste management system was not sufficient enough upstream and or people littered because they either didn't have the right awareness or they don't have the facilities to put it into for recycling or capture. So EPR or producer responsibility is a huge needed lever, highly needed in order to move the dial in a fair and equal way across the spectrum. If everyone had to pay 1 cent to use whatever that material is and it's across the board, then every single person rises with the tide and everyone is in the same boat and there's no cheaters and there's, you know, there's no way to get around it. But then there's money in the system to handle all this lacking infrastructure, which has now really become more evident with a ban from China on recycled materials that are not processed at home. So now everyone is getting this stuck in their front yard and not really having the capacity to handle it.
Who do you look to or follow for either inspiration or information in your field? Who are some of the people that we should be looking out for, paying attention to?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never thought about it.
I'm trying to ask it of everybody because, you know, I want to know who should we be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah.
You know, as a leader in your field, who do you find inspiring?
Well, I would say we're one of the leaders, and I don't have any, you know, I've been in Asia doing this for 10 years and there was no one else to follow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were kind of the early starters of a lot of these discussions, and our Plastic Disclosure Project and Global Alert Platform are still really two of the only global programs that exist that can be turned on or used immediately without the need for any legislative changes, bans, or taxes, and that's still the case. So we pretty much just look at, watch the press and see what people mm-hmm. are talking about, and
It is interesting seeing the level of public awareness these days.
And a lot of it's not exactly correct. Yeah. Some of it's, you know, the Ten River thing, that there's 10 rivers is totally incorrect. It's false. There's millions of rivers and outlets and waterways, and they all contribute. And so to put the focus on just 10, when there was an actual real study done on the water column and the material coming out, that was just a desktop study of volumes near those watersheds. So that's a bit of disinformation, sends people scrambling in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. When, you know, even the city of Los Angeles gets big rains and then a lot of stuff comes out of the water. So no country is really immune to it. It's just that some manage it a little bit better than others. And obviously the belt between the Tropic of Capricorn and Tropic of Cancer, where the big rain events happen and the big storms and the monsoons and the typhoons and the flooding, that's where you really get movement of material very quickly out of the city streets into the rivers or creeks or out. And that's where a lot of the lack of capacity is for recycling and waste collection. So you match those together and you get a big effect.
So there's not necessarily more plastic in those areas. It's just with the torrential rains, it's more likely to get washed out.
They don't have garbage trucks like you have in the West that come every day and every morning and nicely done on your street side curb. They don't have that. So
much more of the informal sector operating.
Yeah, and what they do have is the informal sector, which does an amazing job. So mm-hmm. in some ways, that community is the savior for these big cities and communities, but it's not necessarily at scale or at the quality of the collection. And the cities maybe don't have the material recovery facilities, the cleaning facilities, to bring higher value to that stuff that those people collect. Mm-hmm. So a brand who's wanting to make a new computer case or a new iPhone cover, whatever they want to make, maybe can't get that raw material so easily because the quality is still not there on the collection.
Yeah, I always thought that calling it the informal sector was a misnomer. It's actually pretty formal and well organized in most of the locations that we see it.
Yeah, you're right. They all know exactly what the prices are. They all have their territories. They all know when it's available at night or in the morning. They know what is not valuable, so they leave it behind. Yeah, they're pretty switched on this topic.
People know when to bring their items in.
Right.
What's something that people aren't likely to know about you or your activities?
Probably the breadth of what we do, because people know what we do based on the touch points that they learn about us, but they have no idea that we do all these other things. So we cover education. We have a curriculum for water systems from mountains to the ocean that was funded by the Hong Kong Jockey Club here, but it's for 6th to 8th graders. We want to take this to other countries and localize it into those languages and photos. But that's really showing people how the water system works from the rivers through agriculture, through the cities and into the ocean, and what's carried along the way, what those impacts are. So that's education. We have these monitoring capacities with Global Alert. Plastic Disclosure is really for governments and companies. It's a B2B, B2G program for baseline metric calculation. City can use it, municipality, an airport, a hospital, a stadium, and obviously any company. So there's quite a breadth of where we touch on because plastic touches everyone in every space. And I happen to come from an entrepreneurial background, so when I see things that I think a certain community can enjoy or use or get excited about, then I try to make something that maybe fits that space.
Excellent. Do you consider yourself an activist on plastics?
No. Environmental entrepreneur. So okay. Basically, I'm entrepreneuring solutions that are usable by communities or companies or governments, but you know, we don't sell a product. So the challenge is we're not out there, you know, on the stock market trying to make 1,000 pieces a day. We're just trying to get people to be aware and then hopefully adopt those programs and replicate them into other countries because they can just be copied in a way. We just need stakeholders in those places to say, oh, wow, we can use that and run with it and not reinvent the wheel.
Because that's actually tied into where I wanted to go with the question, because I'm finding more and more activists on particular issues are trying to pivot and get more active stakeholder engagement. They're trying to draw in companies, more of the supply chain, people that in the past they may have targeted, and now they're trying to, you know, draw them in and engage them. So I was curious how difficult is it to get companies to engage?
So we've always been more on the business side of helping business to, because if they win and they have good PR and they get engaged in something, then they look good and it's more chance that the scaled change will make a big impact. I have an MBA and, you know, used to be in the asset management industry. So I come at it from a more maybe a business angle than the trying to raise awareness to fight against something. But plasticity is very much about a safe space for brands to come and talk about their log jams in materials or recovery, how to take maybe spent materials and use that into something new. And I think that's it's a challenge in Asia, partly because the reputation of NGOs is often one of adversarial relationship. And so they initially just think that you are about to go approach them to, you know, get them to stop doing something, when in fact we really hold their hand and help them and navigate how they can do it the best way, because that will help everyone in the long run.
Excellent. Thank you for talking to us today, Doug. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Russ.
Thanks for listening to the Global PSC Podcast, brought to you by the Global Product Stewardship Council and our members. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Global PSC, or check out globalpsc.net for more information.